succession, number 29956, reel 2.
The British and their empire, and the Germans with the desire to acquire an empire.
So quite a sort of Marxist analysis in a
yes,
way.
Yes, yes, oh yes. Well, my father wouldn't have known what the word Marxist meant, but yes, it was. Yeah. It was an analysis that war has an economic basis. And, of course, all I've learned since confirms that.
So a very early awareness then.
Yes.
Although I suppose it was not well formed at that stage. Is that right? You would have been so young.
No, it would have been something I agreed with without knowing why or how I agreed with. I just knew that there were families who children who were at school with me who'd lost their fathers in the war. They were children who had relatives who'd been seriously wounded in the war. Now, there was one man who was known to my father. This young man who fought in the war was actually blinded on the day that the armistice was declared. He was coming away from where there had been action and trod on a mine. Whether one of our own or whether the enemy's, I don't know any details, but it was an accident. It wasn't fighting the enemy. And that blinded him. I now can't recall his name, although I did know it very well at the time. And I do know him because he once came to visit us with his wife, because he married after the war, and she was a wonderful wife to him. I can remember her guiding his hand. This just made me cry, actually, when I saw it. She guided his hand to the plate where his cake was, and then left him to, help himself. And I remember going out of the room and crying, because I'd heard that he'd been blinded in that way. It wasn't even in action. It was such a stupid, unnecessary death. And then from that, you begin to realise the stupidity of war, of killing, because finally they were treated. But again, I remember my father talking about what I now know was the Versailles Treaty and shaking his head in concern for the future.
Yes, he obviously was a very well-informed
gentleman. My father,
yes.
I think my father, in fact, would have made an excellent left-wing politician if he'd been born in England.
In the war as well, if I could ask you, Hetty,
pardon?
Did the war affect the availability of food for your family?
Because then my father, in addition to being the representative of course the Hamburg firm was affected by the war. Their father's sudden income from there, that was cut off. But he then had established his own business in London. And of course we then had no shortage of eggs or butter or cheeses. Food was still coming in and imported. I can't remember much about the rationing, but I certainly was never hungry during World War I. Whatever our rations were, plus food that wasn't rationed, my mother always seemed to have a substantial midday meal for us. She attempted to grow vegetables in our garden. I don't think she was very successful, but the market nearby, the stalls were still, as far as I can recall, fruit and vegetables were always available. And Mother made it, we always, in for 9 months of the year, certainly had a very nourishing soup to start with. Yes, because in those days, the butcher gave you 2 pennyworth of bones of a special kind of name. I know they were beef bones. Marrow bone. That's it, where the bone contained a lot of marrow. And Mother was an excellent cook. I mean, as I explained, feeding her family, looking after her family. She made our clothes, she made our school uniforms. I think Sis and Ada had their first clothes bought for them when they were about 15 or 16. Yes.
And with 10 children, she must have been...
Well,
very
the boys, of course, she didn't make boys' suits. The boys would go to whoever father's tailor was. And there was, oh yes, one aunt, well, aunt by marriage. Her first husband had been Mother's brother, but when he died, within a short time, she had remarried because she had 2 young children, and they had a shoe shop somewhere near Bethnal Green. Don't remember, we were taken there on the tram, because London had trams in those days, and we had our boots and shoes, boots that were buttoned up to about here. I can remember not being able to work the button hook, and my older sisters had to do that. And galoshes, when it wasn't cold weather, but if it heavy showers, we used to have put galoshes over our shoes and had to take them off when we came in to the house. A big black range in the kitchen. And we had one person who was resident domestic help. She was an orphan from the Jewish orphanage. The first one, her name was Regina. Do you want all this detail? She smacked me on one occasion because I obviously had been misbehaving. And I remember quite clearly, I'm going to tell my mummy you smacked me. And she answered, I'm going to tell your mummy what a naughty girl you were. I don't remember what I had done, that I don't recall. And a few months later, Regina left. But it wasn't because she'd smacked me, she married. Because I heard about people losing their jobs, and I really wondered whether my telling mummy that mummy had taken her job away. But my mummy said, taken her job? Regina's married. She's very happy. Mummy's going to get another girl who hasn't got a mummy or a daddy, and she will come and help me. And so Hannah joined the family, and Hannah remained with us all my life of growing up.
Do you remember the end of the war, Hetty?
Yes,
when
I do.
When the armistice. Can you tell
me
about
that? I remember the armistice. And again, listening to my father's talk must have affected me, because we marched round the playground saluting the Union Jack. And my father regarded flag saluting as absolute rubbish, and he disliked very much Land of Hope and Glory, which we learned and sang. And I, again, you see, it was because I adored my eldest sister and followed her everywhere that I listened in to all this conversation. And Father saying, God who made thee mighty, make thee mightier yet. Why Britain? And there was a period when I thought, my father talked like that because he wasn't born here. You see, I was aware that he was a foreigner. Father was not interned during World War I, because he was already a well-established citizen of the borough of Hackney and highly respected as an individual. He was also highly respected by the registrar of births, deaths and marriages, because when my sister, youngest one, was born, Father had said, what name would you like her to have? And Anita and I and my brother and Claire, we all said, oh, we like the name Patricia, and then we can call her Pat. 1917. My father went to the registry office, where he was a familiar figure. Pat was the youngest child. There was the child born after her didn't survive, so she was my youngest sister. And said whatever one says about registration, and said that the other children want her to be called Patricia. And the registrar said, Mr. Rimmel, you wouldn't give your child an Irish name. Patricia is the female for Patrick, who is the Irish patron saint. My father knew nothing about Irish history. Not completely true. I'll come back to 1916 in a minute. And Father said, oh, well, the little ones, they don't know about this. Oh, no, don't call her Patricia. Give her a nice English name like Priscilla. So on her birth certificate, she is Priscilla. And she's never been called anything but Pat all her life, and she died aged 81. 1916. My father supported the Irish. He was shocked at what happened to Connolly. I imbibed all this just listening to them. Now, in 1916, of course, I was in my 11th year. It was Easter 1916, I was 10 and a half. So old enough, really, to understand that. Because my father called it murder. And he would have been, I think, quite pleased to know that, I'm trying to recall the date in which Fiona Connolly was brought by her fiancé to my house, not where I was born. I was married by that time. I think it was Highbury, so it would have been in the 1930s. Now, Dad was still living then. Don't know why I never mentioned it to him. But I didn't. I didn't know. I know I never told him. Her fiancé brought Fiona to visit me, or maybe it was because she wasn't yet married and she'd had a miscarriage.
You were going to tell me about the armistice. Hmm? You were going to tell me about the armistice. What you, you know, when the war ended, how you... Did they have any memorials or anything in your area?
Now, the armistice was 1918, and I can only remember walking round the playground, saluting the flag and singing God Save the King, Land of Hope and Glory, and Rule Britannia, which was another thing, another song my father didn't like. In 1919, the peace celebrations in July, I remember clearly because I fainted for the first time in my life. It was terribly hot, very, very hot, and all the schools of Hackney were meeting on what was known as Hackney Downs. When I got to know the North Downs and the South Downs, I wondered what sarcastic individual had called these grassy fields Hackney Downs. But they were called, and I think it's because the school, Hackney Downs School, is called Hackney Downs. It's one of the schools that's been in trouble with the education ministry. Not in my day. The standing, you see, in the heat, it was a very hot day. I had no head cover. Mm-hmm. I was very excited because, you know, it was going to be a day of jollifications and probably got to school very early. I was at the end of the line, and teachers were every now and again walking up and down the line to see that we were not misbehaving or whatever. And my teacher's name was Barbara, Miss Barbara. All I can remember was saying was, "Miss Barbara, I feel blank." And I think she caught me. I didn't fall to the ground. And the next thing I knew, I was sitting in a deck chair, and a cold compress or something was around my brow, and I was very bewildered. And then they said, "Well, you've fainted, but you've only been out a very brief time. You'll be all right.
What was going on? What did they put on for the celebration?
We were singing mainly, again singing patriotic songs.
Was there a parade?
And there were
all
speeches. And because in my school, in my form, we had a German girl, Helen Lynch. Her parents ran the baker's shop very near us. Oh, and this was even during the war. Our headmistress told us that her parents were nice people. They had lived in England for a long time. And there was to be no teasing of either Helen or her brother John, who was in the boys' part of the school. Because the windows of the baker's shop had been smashed and bread and cakes had been pinched on one occasion. So the head made a speech in the school about people who had no right to call themselves British behaving in this terrible way. In fact, we didn't think it was people who'd lived in Hackney and known them, really. Well, we don't know who did it, because it was done in the early hours of the morning.
Did you know, you were saying about your father, that he wasn't interned. Did you know other people who were interned? And was there any concern in your family about it?
My parents must have known. It didn't concern me.
I just wondered if you picked it up.
No. I don't think I knew anyone who was interned in World War One. No. And in World War Two, it was a different story.
What was it like that period after the war? Do you remember any...
Yes.
Yeah, the after...
Unemployed.
Is that so?
Oh, dreadful, dreadful, dreadful scenes of the unemployed who were expected to line up in no matter what weather to draw their miserable pittance, as my father called it, of unemployment pay. And this was the men who'd been told they would be coming home to a land fit for heroes. My father always sided with the underdog too. And I can remember seeing the queues at the, what were called the labour exchange, where they had to queue. Oh yes, so you brought that back very vividly, reminding me of that. And 1919... 1920-21, I was taken to my first political meeting at the old lovely Queen's Hall, bombed out in World War II, in the year 1922, which was the year that the Red Clydesiders were returned to Parliament. Now, that really begins my political involvement. My sister, my eldest sister, of course, married by that time. She married in 1916. Took me and Anita, the sister, 3.5 years my senior, to the Queen's Hall, where the ILP, Independent Labour Party, had booked the hall for the election results to come through. And it was a night of great celebrations, because it was the first real breakthrough of the Labour Party.
What
and
was
the first time I heard the names of the Scottish Clydeside, James Maxton, Davy Kirkwood, John Wheatley, all of whom were to play a part in my life over the next few years. Because in 1923 I joined the Labour Party. In 1924 I joined the Hackney ILP, and Maxton was a tremendous orator, and I heard him speak many occasions.
This would have been a time, am I right in thinking, when the Soviet Union, you know, that the Russian Revolution had occurred during World War One.
Yes, now I haven't told you anything about that.
Yes,
I mention about my mother having a second orphan to as her domestic to help her and live in 1916, that must have been, and Hannah was already really a family member in 1917.
I'm now going to put a new tape on, Hetty. I'm going to put a new tape on.
Yes, I'm glad.
And then we'll talk about Russia and the effect of this on your life.
Yes.
So this is the end of Reel 2.
What is the time, by the way, dear?
Oh, it's now 11:20.
Oh. Yes. Would you like a drink now? Would you like a tea or coffee?
I'll just finish this, if I may, Hetty,
yes,
because
you,
I wanted to
but
say
would
on
you
here...
Please tell
this
me.
This is Reel 1 and Reel 2 on this tape with no break in between.